My Muscle Project, welcome back to this episode of In the Black. It's the show where we go over fitness business, the gym industry, anything to do with making money and your health. And today we have on the founder of No Bull. If you guys have been in the CrossFit space for a long time, you know this is a company that started its grassroots, started its foundations in the CrossFit community, and it has absolutely exploded to, to say the very minimum. They have, they've even gotten so far to be on Joe Rogan's podcast now. They've obviously got some huge influencers on board. They've really grown the brand through influencer marketing. They've really taken the shoe game and they've kind of put their own twist on it. I think that, the shoe industry is just so heavily dominated by big players, Under Armour, Adidas, Nike. It's a very, very hard game to crack, and No Bull are making a serious run at trying to crack that. And not many brands have. And so I think that what's really interesting is just kind of hearing the plan today from the founder of No Bull, or one of the founders from No Bull, and how they're planning to kind of approach this whole situation. So Michael goes into depth about their marketing plan, how they built their team, some of the stories from the early day of building this brand. And I think you guys are going to absolutely love it. I don't have anything to tell you about No Bull products, except that the ones that we've used very shortly are extremely sturdy. They're great things. This is not a sponsored show. We do not have a partnership set up with them. I just know they're a very quality brand, and that the people that around me that have used their stuff do really like their stuff, which is why we wanted to get him on. We didn't want to get the founder of a company of a product that's not high quality. We wanted to get something on that is notable, it's reputable, it's good for a reason. That's the reason that you're listening to the show. And it's also the reason why you guys should sign up to Wattify, because if you do struggle with tracking your metrics in your gym, which I think that it's basically the most important thing. The most important thing is you know the numbers of your gym. If you don't know the numbers, you have no idea if you're going well, if you're maintaining, or if you're losing money. And when you have a realistic idea, okay, when reality sinks in, that forces action. Reality dictates action. I'm going to say it again. Reality dictates action. So if the reality is really good, the actions that normally happen for most people is they kind of sit back and cruise. They go, okay, things are going well. Let's kind of double down on what's well. Let's just sit back and let the good times roll. But when things are not going well, okay, then the reality is, holy shit, we need to do something. We need to take action. And Wattify has an extremely thorough but easy to use user interface. And that's just kind of their dashboard feature, which kind of gathers all your metrics. I mean, Wattify is controlling all the money that's moving in and out of your business, of your gym. So you want to use that as the first point of call to kind of just do a health check on everything that's working. So if you guys want to jump on board Wattify, they move everything across for you. So if you're on Zen Planner, if you're on MindBody, if you're on any other platform out there, and you've even got some slight hesitations about how good the program is, then Wattify should be your first choice, okay? So move over to Wattify. They'll do all the moving for you. They'll move all the credit card details. They'll move all the user profiles, the dates of birth, the information, the emails, the phone numbers. Nothing gets lost, and you can do it all and get 20% off your first year. It's wattify.com/MMP to get that deal. All right, guys, let's jump into the show with Michael from No Bull. My Muscle Project, welcome back to another episode of In the Black. Today, we have on Michael Schaefer. And if that name doesn't ring a bell, then his company certainly will, No Bull. It has easily been one of the most successful companies that have come out of the CrossFit community. Definitely amongst the likes of, what was the Armin company? Oh, the bars?
RX Bar.
RX Bar. Rogue Fitness. On. Rogue Fitness. Wattify. It's another one as well. And you can safely say No Bull's up there now after being advertising on Joe Rogan's podcast. That kind of like cements your legacy as like a
legendary.
Successful... It's like a successful company. So we're pumped to have Michael on and kind of dig into the story of No Bull because, it's a pretty incredible story, right?
Yeah.
It started with the one shoe and it just like exploded. And we, if you guys didn't know, obviously one of our partners is Whoop. Whoop has a podcast. Michael's been on that podcast. And they shared a really interesting story where I wanted to start, which was about the first shoe that you were going to launch. You had a date set for it. And it was like, everything's going to go well. And then they got the shoe, and I'll let you take from there and just tell us like what happened when you received that like kind of first prototype ready for launch.
Very true story. So people always ask us, first of all, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
To be part of this. We always tell like our, highest highs and lowest lows. And as an entrepreneur, those are really magnified. When the lows are low, they're really low, right? Mm. They hit you personally. Mm. And that was one of those examples where It was at the CrossFit Games in 2014, actually. We were out in California and we were waiting for this shipment of, you know, a couple of sizes of the shoe that we've been working on for over a year at that point. And we were just super excited. We had talked it up to our friends, to our family, to athletes, friends in the industry. Like, tomorrow we're going to show you the shoes that come today, and, you know, fresh new factory, and we'll let you try them and take your feedback, try to shred them to pieces, work out in them. And yeah, we opened those boxes and it just wasn't the quality that we were looking for. And, you know, we were from the industry. I'd worked in the industry as a shoe designer for a long time, and then creative director, same with my business partner, Marcus, who I started this with. And we were just not proud of it. We were sitting there, you know, completely deflated. And we had two options, right? One option was, okay, it's not perfect, but we'll still go to market with it and, you know, make it work along the way. And the other option was, and that's the first time I actually learned about the term sunk cost, you look at it as a sunk cost and start over, right? And as painful as that was, because we have bootstrap business, we started this without investors, we still don't have investors. So this is, you know, Marcus and my and our family's personal savings went into this. We took a lot of risks getting this off the ground. And sitting there in that room and basically throwing out, you know, 8 months, 9 months, a year worth of work that was on our dime was not an easy decision to make. But that's what we did, right? So we weren't proud of what we were seeing there. We didn't want to show that to anyone. And so we packed up the boxes again. This was before we had an office. So it was literally, you know, three of us working out of our houses, walked over to a postal office and shipped it back to our respective homes and started over. Mm-hmm. And there were some parts of the shoe that we were able to reuse and salvage. But the upper, for example, so the soft part of the shoe, we had to completely start over, find a new material. But the good thing is it actually led us to a much better place. And then when we actually did launch and had a product that we were proud of, that was in January 2015, and that's when we first started selling footwear online. So it did end up being a good thing that happened to us, because we ended up in a better place. But at that moment, that was definitely one of the lowest lows that we have and had ever, you know, hit at the point.
It's also adding a reminder, it's listening to that story, it's so much more difficult and adventurous to start a shoe company than like some sort of other apparel company. You're like, you know, just thinking about, like, oh, it's like launching a shorts company or a t-shirt company, like it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
But t-shirts are easy, right? You just slap a logo on and you're off. Like, you're actually creating... Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're right. The apparel, I think, is easier and the barrier of entry is a little bit easier. However, it's actually really hard to get fit right on apparel, right? Especially for athletes. We have a really comprehensive apparel range now that's growing by the day, and fit is always the most important thing for us. And we are, even on simple items like a t-shirt, to your point, it took us a long time initially when we started making our own tees to get them perfect or great. But footwear, absolutely, you know, the investment is much higher. There's a lot more from a biomechanical standpoint. Foot is a very intricate part of your body. And the way it moves, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in terms of engineering, the last that you start out with. So it's not easy to do that. And it also costs a lot more money than apparel because of, you know, opening up molds for all the sizes that you want to make them in. So that's why you don't see a lot of startups, I think, in the space from a footwear perspective.
And I mean, that's a big move, right? You're going into battle. It's not like when you go into battle with apparel. You're going into battle with, you know, CrossFit gym down the street, this person over there. The competition's not that fierce, but in shoe wear, it's like, there's like five or six companies. It's like ferocious, Reebok, yeah. Adidas, Nike. Like,
you're also going, you don't wear that many shoes, right? You're just like, I'm going to get my training shoe. So you need to be as good as Nike. Whereas t-shirt, you might get 30 t-shirts.
Yeah, yeah. So what made you think, like, what was the holes that you were seeing in the footwear market where you're like, this doesn't exist and we're going to create it?
Yep. And that's more a brand philosophy, not necessarily just about footwear, but we really don't believe in gimmicks. And what we mean with that is there's a lot of, you know, pseudo technologies out there and a lot of brands that are, from a product and from a marketing perspective, are telling you, okay, if I wear this shoe, if I wear this apparel, it's going to make me a better athlete, right? It's going to make me jump higher, run faster, And we don't, we simply don't believe that that's true. What we believe in is that you as an athlete have to put in the energy, and whatever you put in, you're going to get back out, right? So that daily grind, the effort that you put into your workouts, that should come from you, and you're going to make yourself better. The shoes are not going to make you better. And we had a funny kind of, after we launched, a couple of incidents where athletes were tagging us and saying, oh my God, the shoes are so awesome, won the event, blah, blah, blah. And we were like, we were right back and said, this is not the shoes, right? This is your effort. You worked your ass off every single day. What made you win that event or that competition? The shoes are part of your body and they help you get through it, but they're not winning it for you.
Mm.
So that was honestly a deep belief of ours. The reason we launched into the functional fitness market and CrossFit was simply because Marcus and I both were CrossFitters and still are. I found it from a previous job at Reebok. I really got into it there. Marcus found it differently. He wasn't at Reebok at the time when we started thinking about this concept. And we just combined the two, right? We knew we could do product a little bit differently. And that's also where the name came from. We had the name way before we had a design for anything. It was not like, okay, here's a shoe design. What should we name the brand? It was actually flipped.
Interesting.
Really about the psychology behind it and our beliefs, and that's where the name ultimately came from. We had a lot of other names that we went through, and in the end, one day I think I woke up and I was like, listen, it comes down to not bullshitting people, right? Mm. And not bullshitting with marketing messages, not bullshitting with what we do on the product side, and that's, we just dropped the shit part and combined it into one word. That felt right for us.
Yeah,
it's a little polarizing, but that's okay.
No, I think everything from anything you guys have ever done from a brand perspective, anyone will say, is it just all communicates really nicely with the photos you take and the athletes you have and the name of the company, the look of it, everything is just, it all lines up with no bullshit. Like, yeah. It's just, it is what it is. Like, there's nothing fancy around it. It's just like, here's what's in front of you. And like, here's, you know, it's like CrossFit. Like, you can do the workout in this time or you can't. Like, there's no fluff about it, right? It's just like, go in, go hard, and that's it.
Yep. Very true.
So you mentioned that you invested your family savings. Now, you did touch on it a little bit in the Whoop podcast about how, you know, obviously you were feeling a lot of pressure and you're kind of going all in on this. And, you know, yeah. It's not like, you know, when we started a business, still living at home in our early 20s, still, you know, our whole lives ahead of us, you know, we had no one relying on us, right? Tell us what went through your head, you know, when you got that shoe. You know, you mentioned it was the lows of the lows, and you've invested so much of your family's money into it. And they're obviously looking at you like, what's going on here? Like, is this going to happen? I'm sure you were feeling pressure to maybe go get a job. Like, what doubts did you have to kind of overcome in this time personally?
Yeah, I mean, I think it also speaks to the relationships that Marcus and I have both, you know, with each other. If the chemistry between us wouldn't be the way it is, where we really complement each other well. I mean, we haven't had a fight since we started this, right? And we have been business partners now since 2012. Noble came online in 2015. It's just an amazing relationship. When I hit the low for whatever reason, from a design side, I get a sample that's, you know, he picks me back up and vice versa. He's more on the marketing and finance side. But we have such a respectful relationship. And that has never changed and will never change. And that's one reason why this is working. I do think that a lot of businesses fail, even though they have great ideas and great product design and great brands, if the team, the core team that you know, starts it or leads the team doesn't get along, at some point you're gonna fail, or it's gonna water it down, or you're gonna make a lot of compromises. So that I truly believe in. That's one reason we're still here, and that's why we got through all these lows. And then the other thing is the family, right? If your family relationships are not intact and the family is not supporting what you're doing, either the you know, the family relationships are going to break up or the business is going to fail. So it magically all kind of worked together. And my wife, for example, was always supportive, right? Even though we do have three kids and, you know, we have a mortgage to pay, and we're not, I'm not 25 anymore, as you can see, but we felt it was right. We really, we knew we were onto something even before we had the product. I believed in Marcus, he believed in me, and there was a little bit of ignorance as well, right? We were just like, yeah, let's just do this and see what happens. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All great businesses start with a little bit of ignorance, whether it's a lot or a little bit, it's in there for sure. Yep. No, that's great. Absolutely. And so walking through the timeline a little bit, you guys took on some pretty notable athletes to support the brand, ambassadors. And thought what was interesting about it is you didn't go after like Rich Froning. You didn't go after Ben Smith. You didn't go after Jason Kleeper, right? These people obviously already had contracts with Reebok and stuff, but you know, these things are always negotiable. Instead, you kind of picked more of the kind of interesting outliers, Sam Dancer, you know, Brookends. I know things have obviously changed since then, but you know, kind of these core group in the beginning. Jared, I can't remember his last name, the guy that's got the beard and looks like a Viking.
Viking.
The way that's right,
Or a florist, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah.
Florist.
What made you pick them? How did, like, I want to know what that conversation was, you know, trying to decide on these athletes and how you picked them.
Yeah. So there's two things to that. So first of all, because we are a bootstrapped business and, you know, what that means is, in the beginning, especially, you don't have any money for marketing, right? So our initial marketing was literally just word of mouth. We couldn't talk to agents that were representing athletes. We didn't have money for big contracts. We literally, like, we found these athletes and they found us. The Sam Dancer story is actually really cool. It was the first time we were, when we launched footwear, we launched it on our website, but it was at an event that Ben Bergeron was holding in Boston, the East Coast Championships. He did it for a couple of years, and we had a booth there that was our coming out party, and we're super proud of, you know, showing the product. We didn't have anything to sell. We only had a couple of samples to show, but people could pre-order. So that was a physical event. I think it was the night of the launch or a couple of nights before we launched online. And Sam kept coming by. We had no idea who Sam was. It was just this crazy looking guy, you know, he kept coming by with his wife and he wanted this bag so badly. And then he checked out the shoes and bent them and did that. We were like, oh, this is a square.
So big and strong. just tearing your shoes in half.
Ripping your shoes.
Deadlifts like 600 something pounds, right? And it's like our beautiful samples on the wall.
Leave the shoes alone.
He would come back like every half an hour or so, and he would be like, I really want to buy that bag. And we were like, dude, we only have 3 samples of the bag. We can't give the bag away. And he was like, no, I'll whatever, you know, and I'm going to get some cash together and I have an allowance for my wife and all this stuff. It was awesome. But long story short, he did end up with a bag. We didn't sign him right then, even though we had a great kind of first interaction with him and conversation with him, got to know him a little bit better. All these people were coming up to take photos with him, but it took a half year for him to feel comfortable signing with us. And that, you know, shows a lot about how important for him the personal relationships were that he was going into, right? He wasn't just signing with a brand and getting money from the brand and then holding up a shoe and saying, buy this. He really saw this as a relationship. And that's true for all of our athletes. So it started with Sam, with Jared, with Brooke Wells. They all were connected somehow through the community. So once we started talking to one of them, you know, we had conversations with Jared Stevens then, and then with Brooke Ends and Brooke Wells, and, you know, now Christy Aramo and Alex Anderson. So all of this happened organically along the way. And most importantly, yes, we wanted to partner them with them because they were athletes and they were successful athletes, but they really, they believed in the brand. They were super passionate about what we were doing. We had an amazing time hanging out with them every time we got together for, you know, either met them at an event where they were competing or had them as part of our company when we did, you know, shoots and product reviews and things like that. It was always, it was just awesome. They felt like they were part of the team. And that goes now all the way up to Catherine and Tia. They're down to earth. They're humble. They're kick-ass athletes that, you know, dominate in the sport. But they're an amazing team to hang out with. And so we, you know, once the company grew, obviously the budget grew as well for us to be able to allocate towards sponsorships. And Tia actually approached us. So we didn't think we could afford her. We didn't know whether she was willing to, you know, leave her previous sponsor. The same was true for Catherine. And we just really hit it off when we started talking to each other. And Tia actually started by sending a text to Todd, who heads up our marketing and content team.
Yeah.
And he literally got a text from her, and she was like, hey, can we talk? And that's how this whole thing, this whole conversation got going, which is amazing.
That's
and
awesome.
We've traveled together. We've come to shoots together. There's a lot of stuff that I can't talk about. But it's just all around an awesome experience to go from, you know, go through this whole process of not being able to afford anyone and then have all these amazing people now that we're working with.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's people, whenever they use a product that they just love so much, they just feel compelled to reach out. Mm. Like maybe there's not as good a deal on the table. And I'm not saying that was the case, but I know what it's been like for us with our sponsorships and the companies that we work with. And what compels us to work with someone is using the product. We always tell people, we've never signed anyone that we don't use their product. It's just always so good. You can't not tell people about it. You know, even if you're paid, to not talk about it, you can't help it.
And then if you have an alliance with a brand because you get paid and you don't believe in the product, you can see through that, right? Consumers can see through that. Everything is so transparent now. Important, right? Just paying somebody to promote your product, I don't think works anymore. Like Will Greer is another great example. I don't know how much you guys know about American football. I don't know that much about it either.
Not that much.
but it's obviously, you know, it's a massive sport over here. And Will Greer is a quarterback for the South Carolina Panthers. Had a bunch of offers on the table from big brands, much, much bigger than us. And he approached us, same thing. He CrossFits, you know, he works out in the CrossFit box. He works out in the gym. He found our product somehow. He loved the brand, the product, and the message behind it. And basically reached out to his manager and said, listen, I want to talk to you guys. And I can guarantee you that we're not paying him as much as he could have gotten from other brands.
Yeah.
But he believed in it. And we don't even have a cleat yet. Like we have a football player that signed with us and we don't have a shoe for him to go play. So, which is even more amazing.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and so now that you're at this pivotal point, and I think that, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs want to get to the point where you guys are at, right? Where they've got a lot of resources and now it's like, okay, we're up against some big players now. You know, you've got obviously like huge brands, Under Armour, Nike, Adidas. These are all the brands that kind of stand on top of you at the moment, and it's like, okay, how are we going to make these moves? And so whenever you're in the growth stage of any company and you're really trying to push hard, things are always stressful, things are always tough. You guys mentioned that you're CrossFitters, so how are you kind of managing like your health and your own training and all this stuff? Because, you know, people start out really good, but then, you know, that kind of stuff falls by the wayside, and you know, especially being a fitness apparel company and like obviously wanting to you know, there's how many people do you rock up and they're in a health and fitness company, like a supplement company, and you see them, they're overweight or they're stressed. They look terrible. And you're like,
when you go to the doctor's office.
Exactly.
Doctor's telling you about how to live your life and what to eat, and they're, you know, not in shape.
They smell like cigarettes and whiskey. And it's like, wow, this is not a good look. So how have you both managed that yourself and then Marcus as well?
Yeah. So we grew up, both Marcus and I, just living and breathing fitness. My parents were both physical education teachers, so that it's kind of ingrained in our family life. So that would never change for me. I can be as stressed out as possible. I'm always going to make time for being active, right? What I could do a little bit more, if I want to be critical, is more mindfulness techniques and, you know, getting into that a little bit more with Headspace or whatever app. And I think that's mine. Sorry.
No, you're
right. But we always make time for that. And that's also very, very important to us when we go to work. The way we build the companies, we don't tell people when they have to sit at the desk, when the lunch break has to be, you know, has to start and when it's over. People can work out at any time of the day. So we do group workouts sometimes that we sponsor at a local CrossFit box. So the whole team or whoever wants to go, you know, it's on us.
Oh, cool.
And that's in the middle of the afternoon. People go for runs in the late morning, over lunch, late afternoon, whenever they want to go out. So we put a lot of effort onto fitness. We have yoga teachers coming to work in the basement. We have a little setup there now. So it's pretty amazing. And you can see that everybody's excited about living a healthy lifestyle. They're not all CrossFitters. In the beginning, I think every person on the team was a diehard CrossFitter. And our first office was in a warehouse because we didn't need a separate office. So we were literally, we had tables set up on the shelves where the shoes were. We didn't have any desks yet. So we had kind of makeshift standing desks. We were all standing in a,
awesome.
In a warehouse in the back with, you know, like a group table. And then we set up a rig behind it. So
oh, nice.
Every day you had a coach coming in. The 5 or 10 of us did a group workout. We didn't have a shower in the office.
Oh,
so
that's...
we tried to time the workout
oh, my God.
A little bit later in the afternoon. But people were okay with that, right? And everybody from that time is pretty much still on the team. And the first female that we hired, Kayla, she's in customer service now and she's doing an amazing job. She was the first woman that we hired, and we were like all these guys, you know, working out together and CrossFitting in the office. And then everybody, just sweaty as we were, would keep on working for a couple hours. And she dove right into that, right? And it just tells you about the kind of people that are becoming part of the team now. It's, you can't do that with everybody, right? And we people see that when we interview them and we talk about that. Obviously, that's not for everyone, but for us, it's a very important part of our lives. For me personally, I have a like a very regimented schedule when I don't travel. I work out every morning at home. I have a setup in my garage. My kids are at home, so I get to interact with them a little bit before they go to school. That kind of gets me going from a mindset perspective. And then I do sometimes work out in the afternoon or at night with the team or whatever, you know, whenever I have time. But a kind of a regiment and a routine for me is very important there. And I have to say, it's actually, we have more time now to work out, I think, than we had when we were starting. Because when you start something, you don't have any resources, right? Mm. I was the photographer. I was the product designer. I did all the videos in the beginning. The set was in my garage. And I made, like, you know, all these contraptions out of snow shovels and broomsticks to take photos of shoes.
Yeah.
And they're much, much better now, obviously, that we have a team in place. But in the beginning, we did everything, right? Marcus did everything on the ops, finance, and marketing side. Todd then came on board as the first employee. But we were working our asses off. We had, you know, no weekends. We had no trips with the family. We didn't have money for that. So it was definitely stressful then. Mm. It's still stressful now, but we're much more, we're much better now about taking time to restore and obviously stay fit. Mm. So... That was a big bonus of growing the team.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's sick. That has got to be the future of like what people want with companies. Do you want to go there?
Training area.
Yeah, and just have like yoga and fitness and all that. Because what everybody wants, right?
Yeah.
So it's got to be the future that even to your own fitness, but more companies will have that.
Yeah. So one of the things I was curious about is, you know, now that it's growing and it's such a big company, how do you decide when you wake up every day? Obviously, there's stuff that you always have to take care of, right? But how do you keep focused on, you know, so many moving parts? How can I be the most effective with my time, right? Because I think that's the most difficult thing that we find now as we grow with the podcast and the gyms. It's like, okay, you get so used to doing things down at this level and so many little different things. And then you move up to this next level, which is a result of just hard work and more resources now. But, you know, how do you decide which of those things you were doing before do you let go of and you outsource? And then are the things that I'm doing now making the biggest impact possible? So how do you kind of set that up for yourself?
That's a great question. It's literally, it sounds like you were part of a meeting that Mark had a couple of days ago, actually over the weekend. Yeah, it's like, so we, when we launched, the two of us and then the three of us did everything, right? But we didn't do everything great, right? I'm not the best photographer. It made do at that time, because that's what all we had to work with. I managed our Instagram account, you know, the first couple of months, which, you know, looking back now, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe anyone actually did this content and was excited about it. But we didn't have a lot to work with, right? So. So we did everything, and it did it well, and it was good enough to launch, but we didn't do it great because we just don't have all the skills that we needed. So now that we have more people on the team that are experts or becoming experts in photography, in post-production, in video, in, you know, on the marketing side, when it comes to, digital or social or whatever it is, email marketing, we have people now that know what they're doing. some of them learned it along the way. They were fresh out of school and, you know, we grew with them and they grew with us.
Mm.
But others came from other jobs. Our company is very young. Most people are in the 20s. We do have a couple of outliers like myself. it's a very young company. It keeps me young and Mark is young. But we now have the opportunity, and hence the conversation a couple of days ago, to go back into more like a smaller part of the company where we can contribute the best, right? So for what that means for me and for Marcus is, yes, we need to be at the top and really think about the vision and the long-term path for the brand. That's super important. But at the same time, I love design. The reason I went to design school is because my background is product design. So I have a mechanical engineering degree and then went to a design school in the United States, and that's why I'm still here. And I love designing. And the more you, in the corporate world, the more you move up, the more removed you get from actual designing, right? You're just like managing people and managing the process. So I'm going to step back a little bit more into the actual design role and help the team mostly on the footwear side with, you know, conceptualizing first kind of directional sketches in regards to, okay, if we went into this category, what could that look like? If we went into this category, what? So that's fun for me. And that's what I'm better at than some other things that I had to do to get the company off the ground.
Yeah.
So we have to do both, right? It's like this, like long-term thinking, but at the same time, we do have a background, both Marcus and I, in more specific fields. And I do think we can contribute there a little bit.
Mm. And in terms of, right. And then in terms of the hires that you make, there's obviously, there's some certain people that you can hire in certain areas that maybe are kind of the first time you've hired someone in that area, and they do it so much better than you that you're like, holy shit, if we just did this, you know, 2 years ago, we would have grown this much faster if we just had someone as capable as this. And one of the areas that is probably the most effective of all areas that any company can hire right now is digital marketing, paid advertising on Instagram and Facebook. It's basically a weapon, right? It's like if you can make mathematics work, if you can make campaigns work, it's just a matter of like, okay, how much can we support the operations? How much can we support the sales or the amount of resources that we're bringing in? So at what point did you, I mean, this is a conversation everyone wants to know about, right? At what point did you guys decide to start running paid advertising? And then how effective was it in making an impact for the growth of the company?
Yep. So we started when we had money for it.
it's a good time to start.
Yeah, in the beginning of, well, you know, we could have had money earlier to start it earlier, but it was always the opportunity cost, right? Yeah, what's the most important thing right now? Should we work on the product? Should we order more product and put the funds that way?
Of course.
What's the most important thing at a time? So once we were able to divert some of those funds towards paid advertising, we started testing, right? And obviously in the beginning, it was Facebook, Facebook and Instagram and Google. And we have a pretty well-oiled machine now internally that gut checks, you know, every day in regards to, okay, where does it make the most sense to put out dollars? So there's definitely a really strategic approach to it now. In the beginning, we did get support actually, which was really cool. I just remember that from Google initially. So Google had reached out to us very early on. I'm not sure if it was 2015 or 2016. We were probably a year old by then. And they saw us getting a lot of traction online. And, you know, they run all their metrics and somehow they found us and they have a team. And that was actually a local team in Boston. Google has a big office here that literally was dedicated to us then to help us optimize advertising and optimize our strategies. So we basically got free help from an expert team at Google for a certain amount of time that we interacted with almost on a daily basis to fine tune this and learned a bunch. Right? So I'm personally not involved in that. And if you ask me specific questions about that,
right,
I'll fail miserably at answering them. But the team that was part of that, including Todd, they did an amazing job taking all of that and learning from it and then, you know, continuing to fine tune it. And we built this really cool the team and strategy now internally where we can constantly, you know, test the return on investment. What if we do this? How does it have an effect on short-term sales? but also on engagement and also on longer term brand engagement, right? And that's always the, that's where we have to weigh how much we want to spend now to talk about the brand, and somebody might actually transact, you know, in a couple of months from now. So there's not an immediate kind of drive to the website to be transactional. It's more about brand awareness. And those are the things that we're juggling on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you guys have, you know, I'll be completely transparent. When I first saw the initial No Bull shoe, I wasn't a fan. You know, just my own personal taste. But since then, you've created a line of shoes. You've created this sort of thing, like a trainer. Like a running shoe. You've created like a high top. I love high tops. I'm a tall guy, so I always wear high tops. And I just, as I saw the products rolling out, I'm like, wow, these guys have just improved so much. I went back and obviously saw the original shoe that you've redone, and that even looks better now. And you just keep innovating. And you mentioned you were part of the design team. And I think that, you know, ideas, you know, there's thousands of ideas out there, but actually implementing and choosing the ideas to run with is the hardest part, right? So in that process of design, you know, how do you choose the idea, like what idea you want to run with?
Yeah, that's actually a really tough one. So especially for us, because we make our product so simple and strip everything off that you don't need. I mean, most of our shoes are literally one piece, right? So the Super Fabric Trainer, the first one we came out with, it's literally one piece with the seam in the heel. And we could only do that because we found a material that did exactly what it needed to do in all the different areas of the shoe, right? So the shoe needs to be protective, it needs to be durable, flexible, lightweight, breathable, all the good stuff. Sometimes you can achieve that by putting lots of layers on it, right? And you put this toe cap on it that's really rigid and hard, so it's protective there, and then you put a mesh somewhere else that's breathable. But what that creates is, first of all, a lot of stitches and bonding areas where you have to put, you know, different layers of materials together. And it also has a lot more room for failure, right? The more you put little pieces together, the more they can fall apart.
Right.
So for us, the ideal scenario was one piece, one seam, and less room for failure. And you know what? You have protection everywhere. You have breathability everywhere. We build structure and support in internally where we need it. So that's kind of our mantra in terms of how we approach product design. Now, if you do that, the material itself becomes really important. It's less about, you know, a lot of brands have like, they have, for this season, we'll have a diagonal going across the apparel this way or that way. And then the next season, it's something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that, for us, that doesn't exist because we keep everything so simple. If you look at our apparel, there's no fancy cut lines, right? Everything is as simple as it can be, but it's still performance product. So, and what makes it performance are the materials then. So the materials are stretchy where they need to be. They wick, they insulate. I'm talking about apparel now. They're breathable. So we work with the best material suppliers that we can find to really give you that comfort, but also that performance feel that you're looking for when you're an athlete. And on the footwear side, the same thing. And that makes it really, really hard to evolve and make it better, because it comes down to what is that next material that we want to use, right? Especially on the training side. CrossFit product, like, stuff just falls apart. Like, if you, not everybody rope climbs every day, but if you rope climbed in a running shoe, you probably get like 3-4 rope climbs out of it before you see failure, right? If not on the first slide down. So CrossFit's very demanding, and if you want a shoe to hold up, it's actually not easy to create a very simple material for that does all that. So that's our biggest effort in terms of evolution of the product. We only want to evolve it and create a new one when we know how to make it better. And a lot of it has to do with material science and finding the right partners to execute against that.
It's probably why CrossFit has ended up so obsessed with shoes. Because we do talk about shoes a lot, right? There's so many shoes.
Yeah.
But I guess it's probably the hardest thing to make a shoe for, because it's just like, it is crazy how many things.
Yeah.
Basically, besides swimming, like, you've always got your shoes on. And CrossFitters hate if, like, the equipment they're using is not perfect for the thing they're doing.
Right.
And it's just, it's so varying.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think that you're also in this interesting balance where, you know, the CrossFitter also wants to then go to the cafe after and look good. Yeah. Right? So it's like, they want to just walk straight out of the gym and still not have a ridiculous fluoro shoe with like all this crazy stuff on it, where it's like, oh, okay, I'm standing out a little bit. Some people want that for sure, right? You bring some of that in, but you do want the options to just be slick and stealth and just go out there and just be like, wow, that guy's in activewear, but he looks really good. And I think that's a really hard balance to find, especially if that shoe has to last. So,
and do rope climbs and snatch heavy and run.
And you've bootstrapped the company. You don't have 40 years of shoe design and technology to go with. I think you guys have done like an outstanding job. And we're pumped with just watching the brand grow and the athletes you have on board. That's probably the thing I like the most. Mm. Just like all the athletes that you're on board with, I'm like, I like all these people. These are great people. They're not like, there's no mixed messaging. They all kind of got that same vibe about it. So I think you've done fantastic.
Yeah, me too. I agree with you.
That's great. So look, I think we definitely have to make a trip out to Boston next year and come visit Noble HQ.
That'd be awesome.
For now, people may not know this, but you have launched basically the Tia Claire Toomey partnership you're mentioning at the start, where people can get free shipping in Australia off any Noble product. And is it the whole range that's available to the Aussies?
Honestly, I'm not gonna comment on that because I want to make sure I don't give you
false comments. We don't know facts.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's whatever's on the website, but I would have to double check on that in terms of whether there's any exclusions or so. I don't think so.
That's all right.
We can add it in later.
Yeah. Regardless, we'll know for a fact pretty soon. But Michael, do you have somewhere people can follow you personally, or would you just send them to the brand page?
Yeah, so the brand page is at Noble Project. My personal one is less exciting, but if you want to follow me, absolutely. Lots of photos of Jeeps. And
nice.
That's what I'm into.
Love a good Jeep.
Mine is, michael.is.noble is my personal handle.
Cool. We like it a lot. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you sharing everything, honestly, and we really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this was awesome. Very nice meeting you guys. Hopefully you'll make it out to Boston. We'll give you a little tour.
Awesome.
Sick. Thanks, Mike.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.